Blog Talk Radio.
All opinions, comments, and representations made by the hosts of Brilliant Ideas Radio and their guests are strictly for entertainment purposes. Well, at least that's what we think we're doing. Entertaining you. Welcome to Brilliant Ideas Radio. Brilliant Ideas Radio keeps you informed about all the awesome products and people in the food industry. Brilliant Ideas Radio is about food, music, and most importantly, having fun with your friends. And now, here is the man with the master plan, Brilliant Ideas. So join the fun and call the studio number at 714-242-5272. Once again, the studio number is 714-242-5272.
Good morning, everybody out there in Blog Talk Radio land. This is the Gray and Ideas Radio Show, as the man says, and I'm Gray and Ideas, and welcome to another Saturday morning show of food, friends, fun, whatever else happens, we never know, and we thank you for joining us each and every Saturday for what we do here. This week, we have a busy, busy show. As you could probably tell if you're looking on your computer, we have all kinds of guests here. We have Holly Herrick. We're talking about French foods. We've got Nick Moss from the Nick Moss Band with some R&B music. We've got Todd Berry with country music. And then last but not least, we have our roving reporter out there in Utah going to the gluten-free expo. We have Alexander Backus who will be reporting at the end of the show. So we've got one heck of a busy show this morning. And without further ado, I'll be bringing on my sidekicks, Laurie, our food news Jersey style girl. Good morning, Laurie. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing great, and let's punch the button here, and we should also have Mr. Paleo Man himself, A.A. Ron. Hey, A.A. Ron, how's it going in Florida this morning?
What up, man?
What up, man? By the way, I have to tell you something, A.A. Ron. Laurie gets really kind of cranky just before the show, and
that'll be the day.
And she, no, I'm the one that gets cranky. She comes down a little while ago and says, how much longer for the show? And I said, 12 minutes. She goes, oh, my God, 12 minutes. Oh, my God. It's like we start the show at a different time every day, every Saturday.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Every Saturday. Different.
So she called me cranky when I said, 12 more minutes, Laurie, at the same time as every week. But anyway, I digress.
Did you
so.
Cranky?
Yes, I have been cranky. I get all cranky before the show. I don't know why. I don't know what it is, butterflies or what. But anyway, on with the show. Okay, Aaron, so we understand this morning you're there helping someone build a barn.
Yes. Well, actually, we have cut down about 7 trees. We have probably a 20-foot bonfire burning all of the trees that we cut down. And we have put 3 walls up on the barn and are about to put the trusses on and then start putting the roofing on. So it's really just about.
Are you Amish? Are you Amish or something? What are you guys doing there?
Well, no, because if I were Amish, we'd have had it done before 7 a.m. you got to figure it's coming up still before lunchtime, and we've just about built the entire barn, so. Making a good time.
That's pretty cool. We're to come, have you guys come visit us in Maryland and build us a barn. I like that idea. Hey, I know you're busy with the barn raising, but I wanted to have you on for the first few minutes because last week everything was busy and we got all sidetracked. But I wanted you to come on and tell everybody about what you did last weekend with your poor Mr. Bosley. Kind of take us from the beginning of what Mr. Bosley is and what you accomplished last Saturday.
Well, Mr. Bosley is a wild hog that I've had for the last almost 2.5 years. He is full wild boar, ugliest thing in the world, would rather chew your leg off than mess with you. I mean, he's a miserably bitter and evil animal. So last Saturday, we finally butchered Mr. Bosley.
Oh, and, hey, Laurie, wait, Laurie, take your smelling salts because this is going to be graphic.
I'm sure it is, and I'm already, I can't even imagine, but go ahead.
So normally, whenever you have a pig, one of the coolest parts about having a pig is either one of the two things. Once you field dress them, you either scald the pig in a big vat of boiling water to get any hair off so that you can keep the skin and the fat, or you burn the hair off of them. So that you keep the skin and the fat. Well,
right.
The wild boar, it's a little bit different. Wild boar, they have a, I don't know what it's actually called, but I call it their saddle shield. And it's a huge, thick piece of cartilage that's shaped like a saddle that goes from shoulder to ham, so all the way down both sides of the animal, around their back. It's this huge, thick piece of cartilage, and it's to protect them from, if they get in fights, from getting, you know, gored with other hog tusks or...
Right.
They can escape dogs and things running through the woods without being cut up by trees. I mean, it's all about, you know, protecting them. So with a wild boar, you don't get to keep the skin the same way you would with a regular domesticated pig. So
no pork skins with a wild boar, huh?
No pork skins with that one. So we had to just string them up and skin them and.
Hey, right about now. Hey, wait a minute. I wish we had like banjos playing and the dueling banjos from Deliverance playing right about now. Cause this would be perfect. But go ahead, you string him up.
I'll get some chainsaws going if you want.
Yeah, oh jeez.
But the last time we did a wild hog, I actually plucked one of his eyeballs out and ate it right there on site. We elected not to do that this time. However, we did pass around his heart. Everybody took a bite out of his heart, and that's always fun.
All right. So you got him strung up on a hook inside the barn, right?
Inside the barn, yeah. Strung up on a hook inside the barn, and proceeded to skin him, which was fun. But I will tell you this: that Joker's head weighed about 75 pounds. So as much as I thought I was going to get meat, almost 100 pounds of that animal. I mean, the thing was over 300 pounds. But
wow.
Almost 100 pounds of it was head. I mean, it was,
wow.
So it's like, and the thing with wild boar, the way they grow long, wide shoulders, narrow hips. And they don't get big and fill out like your domesticated pig do. They're very lean animals. Very lean in comparison to a pig. But yeah, we didn't get a ton of meat off of it, but I got enough to make fried pork belly, and I've had some pulled pork that I've made, and every single bite of him is fantastically delicious. And I don't know if every
Where'd
bite
you find
is
him?
Huh? We caught him wild. I don't know if every bite of him was delicious because I hated him so much. Or because I knew he was so mean that it made everything much sweeter. And I'm not really sure what makes him taste so good, but he's delicious.
Yeah, wow. I've seen some of your posts on Facebook. So you've made a couple of dishes with Mr. Bosley. Now, I get the impression that the lady at the house was not real happy about you butchering Mr. Bosley.
She's not really too upset about the butchering. She's not real keen on the eating.
Oh, okay.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Well, she was sad about butchering him. She was quite sad about it because she liked him, although she never fed him, she never watered him, she never took care of him. She just liked him. She
as
liked
a pet.
The fact that
yeah.
he said we had a wild pig, but there was nothing that was pet-like about him. He was full-on wild animal that would rip you in half if given the opportunity.
Now, did he have the tusk and everything?
Yep, he did. Yeah, they only had about 3-inch tusks. They weren't crazy long, but they had about 3-inch tusks.
So when you went in to feed him, he probably would. Did he attack you?
He would charge at you, and you just have to kick him in the face.
Holy cow!
That was the only way to keep them from attacking. You kick him in the face. And sometimes that didn't always deter him. Sometimes he would still try to knock you down so he could gore you open. But, yeah.
Well, I wanted everybody – I know all of our animal rights group that listens to our show probably loved this story, but I wanted to hear about the backwoods of Florida where you guys are down there hanging pigs and building barns and what have you down there.
I will say this. I'm not going to go into details, but we put him down the same way they do in a butcher shop.
Right.
So it was done humanely. It was done as it's supposed to be done. It wasn't like, you know, it's an animal and he suffered and we were brutal and any of that stuff. It was, you know, there was an animal that we had that we fed and raised to butcher and to eat. I mean, that was the whole purpose of having him. So, you know, it wasn't a mistreated animal and it wasn't cruelly, you know, put down, and you know, it's just we weren't dancing around them like a bunch of wild savages, happy that we had to kill in the yard. he was killed. We strung him up. It was business. You know, we butchered him, and there you go.
Hey, that's the way it's always been done back in the woods and on the farms, and back in the day. I mean, that's what you did. You raised your animals, you killed them on the farm, and you put the meat away and stored it away, and that's just the way it's
done.
And
I'm going to be honest. I think we need more of that. I don't think there's enough of it. It's incredible how much different the food tastes. I mean, seriously. I mean, it really does. It has a richer, greater flavor. It's not, I mean, it's just, to me, when you raise it and you have it, you know what it's been fed, you know there's not been injected with artificial hormones, it's not been fed a bunch of crap. It's The meat tastes better, has a better texture, better flavor, all the way around. It's just better food.
Laurie and I were talking about it. Does it have a gamey taste, being that it's a wild boar, or does it taste more like a domesticated pig since you were feeding it there on the farm?
Yeah, because it didn't eat wild, it doesn't have the super gamey taste to it.
Okay.
I mean, it was fed and it was taken care of, and you know, we fed. I mean, it was mostly grain free. I mean, it was fed a lot of the food that we eat, it was fed, and not a lot of grains. It's just one of those things that made it a point. I wanted something that was naturally fed animal, which is why, you know, we've got cows now. That will be just strictly grass-fed cows, and have a couple of those that will be sent into the butcher shop before too much longer. And, you know, I mean, it's how we live. I mean, it's nice to have a freezer full of meat a couple times a year with something that you know you've raised, and you've raised it in order to be able to eat it. And the dinners and meals are fantastic.
Well, you said that the head weighed like 75 pounds or so. Now, I know when I was in California, a lot of Hispanic guys, they would go to the butcher shop and actually get a head, and then they would have, I forget the head cheese, but they would boil it, and then did you do anything?
They boil it. And they peel all the meat off of the head.
Yeah. Did you do that?
Absolutely not. So the deal is that, yes, all of that meat can be used. However,
right. It's
such a small amount of meat. I mean, it really is a small amount of meat. I mean, I could have gotten some good fat and stuff from the jowls, you know, things like that. But for the most part, it's not really a whole lot of meat on a wild pig like that.
Right.
So to me, it's not worth all of the work that goes into it. Plus,
yeah,
I don't think I have a pot big enough.
I actually had a pig head eaten. I don't know what you call it, but I went there and they had it actually dug a hole in the ground and they lined it with, it looked like a tinfoil type material, but it wasn't tinfoil, but it looked, kind of had the shiny look to it. And they actually dug the hole, put the head in and boiled it in the ground, and they were laughing at me. They told me to go lift the lid, and of course, when I looked in there, there's a big pig head staring me back in the eyes. But that's how they do it there in California.
Yeah, I've cooked whole pigs that way. Dug a hole in the ground, put the coals in, and lined it with corn husks.
Right.
And then put the pig in, and then covered it with more corn husks, and then more coals, and covered it up. But I've cooked whole pigs that way, Hawaiian style. But I've never cooked just a pig head that way.
Well, I wanted to have you on to tell everybody a little story about poor Mr. Bosley and we'll keep looking on your Facebook page for all the wonderful meals you'll be preparing with Mr. Bosley Meat. And Aaron,
I don't mean to interrupt, but by the way, Aaron, you look amazing. I cannot believe how drastic you have changed your body.
And it's changing a little more every day. I mean, it's one of the things. It's constant work, but it's not being.
It is
hard.
A lot of work, but what you are such an inspiration to so many people who realize, you know what, you can do this.
By the way, speaking of that, what is the name of your new website? You've got the muscle website. What's it called?
VanityMuscles.com. And our first T-shirt is out there now. And the first T-shirt, the slogan on the shirt is, "This is just between me and the mirror."
Aww.
It's a T-shirt line that is geared towards bodybuilders, but it's kind of at the same time making fun of bodybuilders. We have several good T-shirts coming. We have a couple of things that are coming on that taking a spin off of something that's quite current and that people really like, but we're putting our own spin on it, which I think it's going to be really cool. And the next phase of this T-shirt line will be making fun of. It'll be geared towards CrossFit, but also making fun of CrossFit at the same time. We're going to be hitting a whole bunch of things. I mean, the idea is CrossFit is for functional muscle. People do these exercises because it's to make them more functional on a day-to-day basis. Bodybuilders do not do that to build functional muscle. Bodybuilders do it to look a particular way. That's the only reason. They can't bend over and tie their shoe half the time. You know, it's just one of the things. It's not functional. So we know that CrossFit is functional, but we're making fun of that. And then bodybuilders is not functional, so we're also taking a jab at bodybuilders. It's been fun. People have really liked it. We've had some pretty positive feedback. We have one over 40 pro that has now joined our team. We have two potential IFBB pros who will be wearing our gear, and two of them will be competing in the next 2 weeks. In all South and for Florida,
good for you.
Wearing our gear. So we've been able to sponsor a couple of pro, semi-pro and pro bodybuilders who are really, you know, joining our team. So, I mean, it looks like it's a product line that could really take off. Just so many people really like the concept.
Well, I agree with Laurie. You do look good. You've been an inspiration with your paleo diet. In fact, we had a paleo dinner ourselves last night. It's just chicken and veggies, and we thought of you while we were eating it. No potatoes, no bread, or nothing.
It looked so good. The sweet potato hash, I hadn't even thought about doing that.
Yeah, Brian, I think, posted the sweet potato hash, and that was good. So you've got everybody watching. You are an inspiration, and keep doing it because we can see that it's working, and congratulations on the new website.
Thanks.
And it's called Vanity
Muscles.com.
Everybody check out Aaron's new website, new line of products and T-shirts and et cetera, and keep us posted. Now you can go build a barn. We're going to switch from killing wild boars to French food, so what a transition.
That's a nice segue.
Yeah, isn't that a nice segue? Have fun building the barn. We'll see you next week.
Thanks, buddy.
Bye-bye.
I'm Ray Lampe, Dr. Barbecue, and I'm here to tell you about the Big Green Egg, the ultimate cooking experience. The versatility of the Big Green Egg is unmatched as a grill, a smoker, and even an outdoor oven. Sear steaks at 800 degrees, slow smoke a perfect slab of ribs, or even bake a crispy pizza or a pecan pie. That's why I cook on the Big Green Egg, the ultimate cooking experience.
And like the man says, get yourself a Big Green Egg at www.biggreenegg.com. You can go in there and find yourself a dealer. Just punch in your zip code. Get yourself a Big Green Egg, whether you're going to be grilling wild boar or maybe some French croissants or something like that. You can go get yourself a Big Green Egg, and it'll work for everything and in between. And, Laurie, now this is going to be a good topic for you. French food, you know, the full fancy French food.
One of my favorites.
One of your favorites. We have a famous cookbook writer. Some of you folks may know her on Facebook. Her name is Holly Herrick, and she has, I believe, 5 cookbooks now, and she's come out with a new cookbook about French cooking, and if everything's working right this morning, we should have Holly on the phone here with us. Good morning, Holly. Welcome to the show.
Good morning. My fingers are crossed that I'm on.
Are you,
hello?
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for joining us. I think we got, are you on a speakerphone? Or if you're on a speakerphone, you need to go to regular phone.
I don't think I am, but hold on.
Okay.
She sounds like she's on a speakerphone, though.
Yeah. Are you there, Holly?
I don't think I'm on speakerphone, yeah.
Okay, that sounds a little bit better. Welcome to the show, and we appreciate you joining us on the show this morning to talk about your cookbooks and your newest cookbook, which is a French cookbook, and I'm looking at it here on your website, hollyherrick.com, and you've been in the cookbook business for quite a while, so you want to give everybody kind of a little background about Holly Herrick and how you got into the cookbook business?
Yeah, absolutely. Can you hear me better now?
Yeah, we hear you.
Mm-hmm. Okay. It's actually my sixth cookbook, Brilliant. Don't worry.
Okay.
It's the second in a series on French cooking, the latest one, and it's called The French Cook, Cooking Pasta and Eclairs. But contrary to what you just said about the big green egg, I don't think you could put them on it. But. nonetheless, the whole French thing, I mean, I'm still going to have a try. I've done it with pizza, and it works great. So, I don't know,
yeah.
Croissant on the grill. No,
I'll have to try it out and see.
Yeah, it has to be pretty hot. And, yeah, it's interesting. It's a fun idea. It could make for a really fun party pretty quickly. So the cookbook business, indeed, it is a business. And I have been in it for about 6 years. Prior to that, I was primarily writing restaurant reviews and food columns for our local newspaper here in Charleston for almost a decade. And I've been writing about food and travel in Charleston and cooking for, I guess, about 20 years. But the whole French thing was unexpected. In fact, the whole food writing thing was unexpected. It evolved. My career plans were to be in broadcasting, actually, food or journalism on a more general level, news journalism. And it kind of got all changed around when I went to college and really got into advertising and sales more and went into publishing sales after school. And then, you know, eventually I got married and had some time to redirect my plans and really fell in love with cooking and cooking for my husband. So I was able to go to a food festival in Aspen, and, you know, there was Julia Child, you know, my idol. I love her still to this day. And I asked her how to get my credentials in food writing. She said, can you go to the Cordon Bleu? And I said, oui, because I could, and I did. And it was fabulous and just, you know, unbelievable confluence of events I talk about in the book, actually, that got me there. So I completely fell in love with France and Paris and cooking, and really kind of went into cooking more than writing for a few years, working in kitchens in France and in Minneapolis, where I lived in the other half of my life when I wasn't in France. And then, you know, after the restaurant gigs for a while, I just decided it's time to start writing cookbooks because I am a pretty good teacher and a pretty good writer, and that's really what writing cookbooks is really all about. So,
well,
it's fun.
New book, it's actually just releasing, what, tomorrow? Is that correct?
It actually just released on the 1st of October, officially, and so it's sort of trickling into bookstores now. I'm sure there are lines going out the door all over the country.
Oh, good.
It's a fun fantasy.
Well, I noticed, I was looking here on your website, it says you have a book release party and book signing on October 13th in Charleston, and Laurie got a copy of your book, and first of all, Laurie loves it because why, Laurie?
Oh, my gosh, it's my favorite color in the whole wide world, pink.
That's what
Holly,
I was told.
It's a beautiful book. What a great gift this makes.
Thank you. I'm so pleased that you love it and that it just so happens to be your favorite color.
Well,
you know, I think that the publisher
is my favorite page, though.
Oh, I have to look, though. I don't know what it is. I'm guessing it's that profiterole with a caramel.
The profiteroles?
Yeah.
It's the salted caramel macadamia nut ice cream and one.
I knew it was going.
Oh my! I want to frame that. I wish I had another book. I would take it out and frame that picture.
I can send you a copy of it.
Oh my! Really?
It is. Yes, absolutely. It's not that hard to make.
I have to admit, I make fun, but I don't know a lot about French cooking. I mean, when you say French food, I think of French fries, French bread, French vanilla ice cream, that type of thing. So, Laurie was showing
yeah,
me the
I know.
all the fancy photos and the nice recipes and all, and you've done a really super job with the book, and you can tell it's a labor of love on top of everything. And you said this is book number six.
Yes, it is, and I'm working on one on soups and potage for French soups and potage now. So
now, what are the other?
They're not
the other
all about French cooking.
I just said they're not all about French cooking. I'm looking at the list here. You've got looks like different books about you've got Southern cooking here. It looks like you've got tarts, a whole book about tarts. You've got Food Lovers,
Tart Love, yeah.
In Savannah, yes.
Yes.
And if anybody wants to find these books, they can find them, I assume, on Amazon and other bookstores.
Yes, and there's also a Southern Farmers Market cookbook. But, you know, even though they're not all necessarily French per se, they all have a common thread that I think really does go back to my French training, which is the real core of it is fundamentals and building blocks and using technique to weave deliciousness into your food, whether it's a simple salad with a vinaigrette, like I have in Southern Farmers Market cookbook, or, you know, making a fantastic caramel sauce. So there's continuity there, and I think there is a lot of confusion about French cooking. It is all of those things. Those are all French foods that you described, and some of my favorites at that. But it's a lot more than that, but it's also much more simple than people think, I think. Or simple, comme on dit en français.
Well, if you, what you said your favorite, what is your favorite in your newest book? What's your favorite recipe?
My favorite recipe in cream puffs and eclairs? They're both sweet and savory recipes, so I'm going to pull one from sweet and one from savory. I've got to say that I'm with Lori that the profiterole, which is an ice cream, a cream puff filled with ice cream of any flavor, in this case it has a salted caramel macadamia ice cream, and then it's in the cream puff, and then it has hot caramel sauce over it. I mean, it's really, really truly yummy. And there's a variation on that with an eclair, again, using salted caramel, a pasty cream. Savory, on the savory side, I probably would have to go with, I really love my little French onion soup eclair. So like baby eclairs filled with cooked down onion confit, and then they're cooked down in a stock, so it tastes a lot like a French onion soup. And then if they're cooked off under a broiler, so that the Swiss cheese on top gets all melty, and they make fabulous party food.
Wow! And I
those are my two favorites.
I know
Swiss
cheese like crazy. I love Swiss cheese, so that's amazing. And well,
Laurie,
my
Laurie, I expect you to make all these recipes for me. You know, now you've got a book, and now
I'll have to invite Holly over. And
I know. Are you all in L.A.? Is that where you are?
No, we're actually in Maryland. I was in San Diego, but we're in Maryland now, on the eastern shore of Maryland. So you're in South Carolina. You're not too far away.
Okay, no, not at all. In fact, I'm going up to Williamsburg next week. I'm going up to Williamsburg. I've got a signing, and I've got a good friend up there, and that's kind of getting really close, I think.
But, yeah, you're close enough. You stop on by and make us a couple of French tarts. And.
Yeah, next time I go up to Williamsburg, I might have to do that. Yeah, no, I know croissants. No, that's a tall order. That's like you first have to do puff pastry, and then regular pastry, and turn it until kingdom come. I did that for 3 months in the Poisson in Paris, and so cold in those kitchens. They have to keep it so cold to keep the butter separate from the pastry so it's soft. I basically almost lost the top of my fingertip closing one of the steel cabinets because I couldn't feel anything because my fingers were frozen.
No kidding.
Wow.
So it's that difficult to make a croissant. I never knew that.
Oh, it's a big deal. I know a guy, there's a wonderful chef here in Charleston, a French chef. He's très French in the best sense of the word. I'm very proud that he does all of his by hand, manually. At Fauchon, we did it manually, but with the help of a machine. And then another, you know, sort of benefit of, besides working with one of the best pastry chefs in the world, Pierre Hermé, a formidable man who scared me, frankly, but I learned a lot from him. But with all the reject croissants, including the ones with chocolate in them, you know, the rejects, if they were not utterly perfect, went into a big bin. And, you know, we started there in the mornings, like 4 a.m., so by 6 o'clock, you're ravenous, even though you've probably made already 1,000 croissants. So that's what we all have for breakfast, croissant every day, every morning for 3 months. And, you know, the truth is I've kind of got over them after that.
And you know what's funny? They're not my favorite. I'm not a croissant.
Well, yeah, but I guess what you're telling me is the ones they serve at Burger King, the croissant sandwiches, those aren't the real croissants then, right?
those wouldn't even make the entry to the front door. Those would be thrown to the rats in the street. Sorry, Burger King. It's completely and total apples and oranges, of course, because those delicious, super flaky. I'm sure you can get them in Maryland. They just crack almost between your teeth with the butter and the flavor, as opposed to those ones that just kind of mush out on you. I just really definitely can't eat that, or a McGriddle for that matter.
I can't even picture Glenn going to a bakery and saying, "Can I have a croissant?"
No, I can't either.
I know, it's hard to say it. Eclairs and cream puffs. I mean, it's the same pastry. It's a pâte à choux. It's completely mindless comparative to making a croissant. It's really a completely different thing. As I said, I think there's a great quote, I think, in the front of the book, which, of course, comes from my favorite person that ever lived, practically, definitely on the top 10 list of people that I know or have read about. It's Julia Child, and she says, "Happily, choux is one of the easiest pastries to make. Bring a little water and butter to a simmer in a saucepan. Dump in flour, beat over heat to thicken it, and whip in a few eggs. That's all there is to it." And it's really true. And then you just pop it in the oven, and up it pops, and then you can fill it with really anything and top it with really anything because it has such a neutral, buttery, eggy, fluffy flavor. It's kind of somewhere between – it reminds me a little bit of a popover, but not quite as eggy. I just love them. I really had a blast making them in the kitchen, and my dog was having a grand time sneaking little cream puffs off the cooling rack whenever I wasn't looking. Yeah, I think we both puffed up a little bit.
You use nice paper in this book too.
Nice what?
Very nice paper.
Nice paper.
Paper, yes. As a publisher.
She's big on paper.
I'm big on paper, too. We definitely are. Big on pink and big on paper. I definitely need to give a huge nod to the publisher, which is Gibb Smith, and they publish beautiful books. And they spent a lot of time, effort, staff, and money to get a really beautiful template for this series. This is the second. There's the first one on sauces, which I wrote, which came out in March. But so they have a consistent template for the books and beautiful paper and gorgeous photography. This photography by...
I see it's in Utah.
Yes, I know. Isn't that great? That's gotta wave the flag for everything made in America. And Alexandra Jufuria, who's a photographer, is also American, although she's based out in California. And she did a fabulous job. So I'm very pleased with it. You know, it's like a new baby.
It looked wonderful, and we appreciate you sharing it with us today. And people want to find you, they can go to your website, which is hollyherrick.com. They can find your information about all your books there, along with they can go to Amazon and pick up copies of your books. And I think what I'm going to do, Laurie, is I'm going to get myself a, what do you call it, a little hat? Beret? I'll get me a beret.
A beret, oui.
Oui,
you can parade it.
Like the song, like Prince's song, Raspberry Beret?
Yeah.
There you go.
Maybe we'll try
some
French cream puffs and eclairs and take a picture for Facebook using her.
Seriously, I would love it. That would be so much fun for me.
Yeah,
and on the website, I also...
Do it.
No, I mean, I've embraced the idea, like, wholeheartedly, more than 100%. You think it would be great. The whole idea is to get people in the kitchen and having fun. But, yeah, indeed, I wanted to close out on getting back to the website. I do have a blog there that's been so deep in the trenches with promoting this book and also getting ready to write the next one. And I haven't really written on it, but I do regularly write recipes and restaurant news for Charleston so that people can subscribe and join up to the blog and just kind of keep up with what's going on.
Okay.
So, yeah. But the books are definitely out there in the universe, also in Canada. It's being distributed in Canada as well as the United States.
Wow.
Well, we appreciate you.
The photography is beautiful. It's a gorgeous
yes.
book. And best of luck.
It is a gorgeous book. And plus, it's Laurie's favorite color paint, so that gains a lot of points just right
Perfect.
There. So thank you. Thank you for joining us.
It's great.
And,
great
everybody
fun.
Check
thank
out
you.
Our website, hollyherrick.com, and you take care. We're going to take a quick break. Our next guest coming on here, if you guys like rhythm and blues and you're going to be in for a treat, Nick Moss from the Nick Moss Band is going to be joining us, and they've got a new, what do you call it, the Kickstarter. Couldn't think of the name there for a second. They've got a new Kickstarter program where you can become part of their new upcoming CD. This is CD number 10. I'm going to play one of Nick Moss's cool songs that you think everybody will like here, and then we'll be right back here in about, 5 minutes to talk to Nick Moss with the Nick Moss Band. Everybody hang tight. We'll be right back.
that was Nick Moss Band, and the song is called I Want the World to Know, and we are lucky enough to have Nick Moss joining us this morning on the show to talk about his band, Rhythm and Blues. And I tell you, Laurie, we go from Raising Barns to Butchering Hogs to French Cream Puffs and Eat Players to Rhythm and Blues. Now, where are you going to find a show like that? We'd like to welcome... Yeah, really. We like to welcome Nick Moss to the show. Good morning or good afternoon, Nick. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. How you guys doing?
Oh, we're doing great. What great music. That was fantastic. And that song is actually on your new CD that you're working on Kickstarter, I believe, right?
Yeah, that's going to be on the brand new CD called Time Ain't Free.
Time Ain't Free. And what a great group of music, and I got some of the songs here that you guys sent to us, and I wanted to have you on the show here because I saw you on Kickstarter, and I'm a big rhythm and blues fan, and you guys have been cranking it up for quite a while. And can you tell our listeners a little bit about Nick Moss and the Nick Moss Band and how you guys got started and how long you've been in the business?
Yeah, I've been playing for 24 years. Professionally, 24 years now.
Wow.
I grew up in Chicago, started playing music as a kid, and got into the blues scene when I was about 18 years old in Chicago. Actually, I got into it a little bit before that. I was kind of, my brother and I were sneaking into clubs in the city when we were in high school. And, I got my first real job when I was, first real gig when I was about 18 years old. So I've been doing this for a while now. And, I've had a chance to play with guys like Jimmy Rogers and Pine Top Perkins and Willie Big Eye Smith and James Cotton and Junior Wells. Those are the guys
wow.
that kind of shaped, yeah, they were the guys that kind of shaped me, my musical style, I guess. And from there on, I kind of just got, I just went in so many different directions with blues. I found that, I loved it so much. I really didn't want to do anything else with my life other than be a musician. And, I love all kinds of music, but blues is at the core. R&B and soul kind of, like you heard in that song is a big
right.
influence. And,
I like blues too because Laurie tells me when she listens to, like that last song we just played, it sounds like striptease
yeah.
music for her, so that's why I like blues.
All right. Well,
that to me.
there's another term for that. They call it baby-making music.
Oh, baby-making music. There
oh.
you go.
I like that.
That's what you put on a song like that. You put on when you want to get comfortable with one another.
Well, you guys have got this Kickstarter program that you are working on, which is I believe your 10th CD, and you want to tell people a little bit about the Kickstarter program and what that's all about.
Sure.
I've got a link here on the show that people can click and take some right straight to the Kickstarter program. But tell them a little bit about what you're working on and what that's all about.
Well, basically, Kickstarter is a way for people to be a part of a project, whether it's music or art. It's all about the arts, whether it's music or painting or even cooking or writing a book. They have all kinds of great things. I'm not the only guy on this website. There's, hundreds of thousands of people doing this.
Right.
And it's really a kind of cool idea to get people that involved with what you're doing. I've been making records for, like I said, almost 19 years. I've been playing for over 20, but, I started making records about 18 years ago. And 15 years ago, I started my own label.
Okay.
So I actually have my own recording label. I have a studio. It's not the easiest thing in the world to be able to put out a recording. It takes a lot of time. It takes a lot of money and creativity. And there's a lot of things involved. And, I've been doing this for 15 years. We've got 9 CDs out. And
wow.
We spent a lot of money making these records and spent a lot of money promoting them, and you know, it's a labor of love. You know, if I didn't love what I was doing, it's certainly not putting me, you know, in the top 1%, as they say.
Right. Well, the nice thing about it too is you're doing such a service to the world with all the babies you brought to the world with your music. So
that's right.
You've got a one-track mind here.
I'm doing my part to populate the world.
That's right. Hey, what I'm going to do next? I'm going to play the other song that you sent to me, which a lot of people I've heard this before. It's called Was I Ever Heard? And this is a great song. And then what we'll do is when we play the song, we'll come back and chat for a few more minutes. And you can tell people more about when they go to the website for the Kickstarter deal, what they can get and maybe the different levels of investment and how it all works. So we're going to play your next song here. It's Was I Ever Heard? And we're right back with Nick. So everybody hang tight. We'll be right back. that was Nick Moss Band, What I Ever Heard, and we're here with Nick Moss from the Nick Moss Band, and we're talking about his Kickstarter program where you can become part of their new CD if you go to the Kickstarter website deal that we've got here on the show and click on. And Nick, tell people how they can be involved and different levels of involvement and what they can do, and I think there's different prizes and things they can win by making a donation.
They can go right to you know, the Kickstarter page and look up Nick Moss Band. I also have links on my Facebook and my website if you can go to nickmoss.com.
Okay. It's a cool way to get involved from the ground floor and be part of the new CD. And I was also reading here a little bit about and watched the video from the Kickstarter program. You've got a new singer who's joined with you just recently. And who's that? And what's the background on your new singer?
Michael Ledbetter. Michael's been in the band for about almost 3 years now, or 2.5 years now. And the first song that you played today, that I Want the World to Know, that's Michael singing on there. I'm playing the Homicidal Guitar Band. And the last song that you heard, Have I Ever Been Hurt, that was me singing on that one. So we kind of split the album up with him singing and myself singing. Michael's been a great addition to the band. He's incredible vocalist, and you know, just his enthusiasm for music and blues and soul and R&B. He comes from a background where he sang opera for years. You know, as he was kind of like a child prodigy. You know, they figured out early on that he had this golden voice, and he was singing in choirs and all kinds of stuff in grade school and high school, and eventually ended up being trained by a very famous opera singer and singing in Chicago, and went to Europe, and you know, even did the national anthem at a White Sox game as a teenager.
Really?
And Michael's a good kid, and he grew up in the area here, and The one thing that's cool, man, is that he's got direct lineage to Leadbelly. The last name Ledbetter. If you got any blues historians out there, Leadbelly's real name was Huddy Ledbetter.
No kidding.
And he's related on his father's side to Leadbelly. So he's authentic, people.
And your new CD, you're hoping to launch this in March, right? Like sometime March 2015.
Yeah, we're hoping to launch the CD in March. We've got about 11 days to go on this Kickstarter campaign, so we're getting down to the stretch. And you know, I guess I should, you know, maybe people should understand that one thing about Kickstarter is like you don't get any of the funds unless you reach your goal. So
right.
I can't like stress enough that, you know, if you're out there and you listen, you like what you hear, if you want to participate, you can go right to that Kickstarter page for Nick Moss and check it out. There's like different pledge levels, and starting at $5. For $5, you can get a free download of any one of my past CDs, the previous 9 CDs. You get a free download for $5. And up to $2,500, where I come play at your house, my whole band personally will come play at a party for you, or just for you. You know,
as long as it doesn't get
weird. Yeah, as long as it doesn't get weird, I'm cool with that. No.
Well, Nick, we appreciate you joining us this morning, and you guys, I saw you were at the House of Blues in Chicago. I think this past week, like, was it Wednesday or Thursday?
Yeah, we were there the other night, and this is kind of a, we call this our light week, because we usually kind of chill before we head out for big tours. We're leaving in a couple of days to go to Europe. We'll be in Europe for about 8 or 9 days. Then we come home, and when we get home, we're home for about a week, and then we're pretty much out until Christmas. We go to the West Coast for 4 weeks. Come home for 3 days, and then head out to the East Coast until like the 22nd of December. So we're going to be all over this country in the next 2 months. And
you
if you want to,
and you can find out all about your schedule if you go to your Facebook page and click on that. There's more information about where the band is and more about the band. And we appreciate you taking time to be on our show. And I want everybody who's listening, hey, if you want to go out and make a donation or make a baby, go listen to his music and go to the Kickstarter program and make a donation. And we wish you the best and hope it all goes well. And you're like about halfway to your goal right now. I think you're like at $7,500, $7,800, somewhere in that area.
Wow.
Just a little less than halfway, but we're hoping that with the help that you guys are giving us and some other outlets that we'll get there. You know, I'm not worried just yet, but it is getting down to crunch time. And like you said, and I said, if you want to check it out, you can. Even my website, nickmoss.com, has a direct link to there and into my Facebook page, my Reverb Nation page. You can, you know, there's a lot of ways to figure out how to get there. You know, you're just going to have to want to do it. And I think it's a cool thing, like you said, get it on the ground floor.
Yep.
Be a part of it. And, you know, you can tell your friends, hey, man, I helped make that record.
There you go.
Exactly.
Well, thank you, Nick, and good luck with the project. And keep us posted and enjoy Europe on your whirlwind tour you're going to be going through until Christmas. And you're always welcome to come back anytime.
All right, next time I come back, we'll talk about my grilling tips.
Yeah, there you go. Hey, make it a date. Next time when you get back to all your travel, come back and we'll talk about barbecue.
I can talk about barbecue as much as I can talk about music, my friend.
Well, you're on. When you get after Christmas and you're done with your tour and come back on, we'll talk all about that. Do you have a great, by the way, do you have a green egg, big green egg?
No, I just got two big old homemade smokers out in the backyard.
Oh, there you go. Well, come back and see us sometime. All right, take care. All right, everybody, check out his website. The Kickstarter link is right here on the show link. All you do is click it and go and be a part of his new CD, and we appreciate him taking time. You also, like you said, can find out more at nickmoss.com and go to his Facebook page. And, Laurie, we're going to take another break here. Our next guest, we have another musical guest coming on, Todd Berry from Short Circuit. Records is going to be joining us here. He's got one of your favorite songs, which I'll play next.
Love him.
Todd will be joining us here in a couple of minutes. Everyone, hang tight. And this is Laurie's favorite song. It's called Things a Man Needs to Say, and we'll be right back here with Todd Berry.
Do it.
That was Todd Berry, Things a Man Needs to Say, and unfortunately, Todd was supposed to be here, and he's not yet, so hopefully he'll be calling in here in just a few minutes. I just sent out smoke signals to him, so hopefully he'll be coming to us here shortly. So, Laurie, that is your favorite song, though, right?
Oh, my gosh. It's one of the most beautiful songs I've ever heard.
Yeah, it's a great. He's a great songwriter, and I think he was on Star Search years ago, and I can't remember the exact story. Yeah, I believe so. I wanted to ask him that because I think he was on Star Search years ago, and he's got a new record company. Well, it's not really new, but he's promoting new talent. It's called Short Circuit Records. So hopefully, in a few minutes, we'll be able to have Todd on and play some of his new music and talk about Short Circuit Records. But in the meantime, because we're a live radio and you never know what's going to happen, guess what, Laurie?
Food news.
Food news. Yes, you need to give us food news story, and hopefully, I'm going to be able to find Todd in the meantime. So fire a food news story at us.
Oh, good, because I really do have a fun article I wanted to read, and it's about beer. And I know people think you're a beer drinker, but you're not really a beer drinker.
Not really, no.
Everyone who knows me knows I never, ever drink beer, but I want to try these. I have an article. It says 5 pumpkin beers you should drink this fall, and I am going to. Linus has it right. There's definitely a great pumpkin, Charlie Brown. And there's a lot of great pumpkin beers. Here's 5 for you to try while you're sitting in a pumpkin patch on Halloween night waiting for the visit from the great pumpkin himself. Do you like that show, by the way?
What, Charlie Brown?
The Great Pumpkin.
Yeah, of course, because, you know, I'm like Charlie Brown. Everybody, I got a Hershey bar. I got a Milky Way. I got a rock. I can relate to Charlie Brown in that show, yeah.
I actually haven't seen that one in forever, I have to admit. I can't remember the last time I saw The Great Pumpkin.
Well, we're going to have to watch it because I can guarantee it's going to be on probably the next couple of weeks because isn't Halloween around the corner, so we'll have to find somewhere or go rent the video or something.
We'll go to Dan's.
There you go. So this new pumpkin beer, what's it called? You said gourd something?
Well, there's a couple of them. It's called the pumpkin beer has had a popularity trajectory similar to that of a boy band. The style has taken a smashing. This is a Maryland-based Evolution Craft Brewing Company. We should go there. And it's Kathleen D. Bishop told us a bit about the brewing method for this twist on a classic pumpkin offering. And she says, we add locally grown roasted pumpkin to the mash and traditional pumpkin pie spices to the kettle, and then it's fermented with a Belgian yeast strain. This one sounds really good, but this one, it says here, the spices common to the style are present, but they're deepened by the spices and the fruity eaters inherited by the Belgian yeast. Flavor-wise, cinnamon is front and center, while the supporting nutmeg and the allspice work together with an earthy malt character. But this one sounds
good.
Like my favorite. It's called Two Roads, Rosemary's Baby. Another movie.
Okay.
Movie. What happens if you age your pumpkin ale in rum barrels? Very good thing. It's Two Roads Brewing Company, based out of Stamford, Connecticut, and their pumpkin beer is aged in barrels that were used to age rum, and it says it's delightfully rich. This sturdy beer taste has ribbons of vanilla running through the classic autumn spices. And the rum itself, excuse me, is not clearly pronounced, and instead the barrel lends more complexity than actual rum flavor. The spices are intensified, and the malt character is deepened by the aging process. It is a full-bodied and flavorful fall seasonal. That one sounds really good.
That sounds good. And one of those you told me earlier has a high alcohol content. Is that the one?
That's the one coming up. I think it's a Fat Jack coming up. Yes, it's a Samuel Adams. It says Samuel Adams delivers a robust entry to the pumpkin category. Perhaps they call him Fat. It's called Fat the beer itself is called Fat Jack.
Okay.
It says here, Fat Jack outweighs its sibling of the Sam Adams Harvest Pumpkin and clocks in at 8.5 alcohol by volume.
I didn't think they could sell that in the U.S., but I guess they can.
Yeah.
And it's called, it's by Samuel Adams, it's called Fat Jack?
Fat Jack. It says it's
I guess
dark,
like for Jack-O-Lantern, I guess.
Yeah, Jack-O-Lantern. It says there are some dark fruit present, raisins, and the dried cranberries that are among them, all adding to the well-established fall flavor profile. This Fat Jack would be a knockout with a dense, freshly baked pumpkin cranberry bread or muffins, while the smokiness invites a pairing with one of the many maple bacon confections floating around these days.
Hmm. Sounds interesting.
You would like to, I think.
Yeah, sounds like a good one. It's called Fat Jack. I wonder if it's at Walmart. No, I know they don't. That was just a joke. well, guess what? We don't have Todd. We don't have Todd Berry. So I don't know. Somewhere the lines got crossed or something because he's not lighting up here. And I guess what I can do.
Something must have happened.
Do what?
Something had to have happened because he's.
Something with that because he actually touched base earlier. I'm checking on Facebook right now just to see if his he's got a manager who's been communicating with me. But I just said, "Where is Todd? He's on," and I got no answer. So. I'm going to play it just for the heck of it because I like Todd Berry. I'm going to play one of his songs. It's called Futuristic Cowboy, and that's one of his new songs that we were supposed to talk about today, but I'll play that, and we'll come back. And when we come back, we're supposed to be having a call-in from Utah at the Gluten Free Expo from Alexander Backus. They should be calling in to give us an update of what's going on in the gluten-free world. So everybody hang tight. This is Todd Berry. Song's called Futuristic Cowboy, and I guess we'll have this Futuristic Cowboy on some other time. Everybody hang tight. We'll be right back.
He looks into the mirror, makes his way out toward the stage. He hears the intro as the music starts. He sees the crowd from behind the microphone. From town to town, he knows the clubs are his only home. He loves the singers in the legends of the past. Well, and Willie, Hank Jr., and Johnny Cash. But he loves to sing songs of his heroes of today. Chills run up his spine as their songs begin to play. He sees the tones of the silver throne. He just knows them all. His dark brook to the king. He'll mean everything. He'll also fill their shoes one day. But it's too late to dream away. The dreams you never will destroy. Futuristic cowboy. On his radio would work. He'd love to leave for Nashville, but he puts his family first. His neck is red in his country to the bone. The life he leads lives in the words of their song. He sees the songs of Timber Grove. Him dark brooks still the key. souls to him need everything. He longs to fill their shoes one day, but until he'll dream away, as he sings for you tonight. It's a dream come true, standing in this bright spotlight. There's no place on earth he'd rather be than in the arms of his family. He sings a song to Tim McGraw.
Futuristic Cowboy, and Todd was supposed to be joining us this morning, but I don't know what happened to him. Like, somewhere along the line, we got crossed up, but we'll have Todd on some other time when it's convenient. And, Laurie, are you still there with me?
I'm still here.
I'm thinking about pumpkin beer right now.
Okay.
Because our next caller hasn't called in yet either.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, it's been one of those days. I'm going to give her a few minutes. She's calling from the Food Expo, Gluten-Free Expo in Utah somewhere, and I think we might have her right now. I hope this is her. If I press the button, and hopefully we have Alexandra back calling from the Food Expo, or the Gluten-Free Expo in Utah. Good morning or good afternoon. What is it out there in Utah? Is it, I guess it's still morning. Hello.
Good morning. No, yep, it's still morning. It's almost 11 o'clock here.
Yay, so you made it. So what's going on there in Gluten-Free World?
Yes, we made it. Well, the expo opened this morning around 9, and we've had so many people coming through. So last year, this expo had 9,000 attendees, and it's the biggest national gluten-free expo in the nation. So it's huge. And officials today were telling me that they're having more people. They're expecting more people this year, and they already had 1,000 people walk in the first hour. So if you can imagine, it's just kind of crazy. There's gluten-free food everywhere, and there's a ton of people walking around.
So what's new in the gluten-free world these days in the food industry?
Well, we have a bunch of vendors. I think that's probably everybody's favorite part of coming here. There's just a bunch of vendors and local restaurants.
Right.
So here we have a lot of – it's just education and resources here. They're having cooking demos. There's some lectures, like medical, nutritional lectures. They're offering breakfast. But, I mean, every vendor has just something new, and that's what's so cool about these is everyone gets to come through and just try people's new products, and I think that that's the favorite part. And, Gillian, I actually have one of the attendees here with me, and I think that she would maybe have a better perspective of what everybody is offering. So I'm going to go ahead and put you on speaker right now.
All right. Good morning, whoever this is. Who do we have? Uh-oh. We lost them, Laurie. Just like
You're
that.
Kidding.
One, two, three. No,
when she put on speaker and we lost.
Sure,
and that
well,
happened.
She probably, maybe she hit the wrong button when she went
there. Yeah, well, sometimes you're in those convention halls, the connections aren't so great. Oh, hold on, she's calling back. Let's try this again. Okay, Alexandra, are you there?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, we hear you.
Sorry about that, girl. All right, I'm here with Susanna. Susanna is here from Utah, and Susanna, talk to us about how, have you been to this expo before?
Yeah, this is my third time coming.
Your third time. And
yeah.
How, why do you keep coming here?
I came the first time because I was overwhelmed when I got diagnosed with celiac, and I was like, there's something gluten-free in Utah. What? So I came the first year and was amazed by the number of people. I felt like I, like, realized how many other people have an allergy or, like, know what I'm talking about. And so that was really cool, just seeing the sheer number of people.
Yeah.
And I come back because there's free food, and I get to see new companies and see new products and, like, try a bunch of things. And be like, I really don't like that, or I really, really love your product. And, like, I want you to know that I love it.
So, I mean, walking around here today, you've been here for a few hours already. So what's something new that you've tried that you were just loving?
Oh, my gosh. Okay, so I tried a drink, a Yakult. It's like a probiotic drink, and it's amazing. And then Mydell has an arrowroot cookie. It's basically an animal cracker. And that's like, you know, comfort food. And that's like one of the hardest things when you change to a new diet is like those comfort foods and finding things to replace that. So it was pretty fun eating animal cookies for the first time. And there's another company that has Asian gluten-free food. I have not had Asian food in years. And having that, I had my first dumpling this morning for the first time.
Yeah, kind of the basic consensus around here is just we get to walk around and try food and have food that a lot of people with this restrictive diet just don't get to have. And I think that that's kind of what's so nice and it's so humbling to be around that because you don't feel like alienated and you don't feel like you're someone maybe out of the norm and it just makes you feel kind of comforted. So brilliant. Do we have time to talk to one of the vendors right now?
Sure, go ahead. You got a few more minutes. Who are we talking to?
Sure, we're going to talk to his name is Roberto. He's with Char, which is a European gluten-free company. And I'm going to, was that speaker okay? Could you hear us?
Yes, we hear you fine.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Brilliant. We're here with Roberto from Char.
Hi, hello there.
Hello, how are you? Welcome to the show.
The show is good so far, but good to see so many people interested and getting the communication they need and the samples of food, delicious food to us and competitors. We don't care. It's all about gluten-free.
So what kind of products do they have there?
Talk to us about the kind of products that we have.
Okay, so basically we try to be the full solution, but hey, we do have our specialties. It's bread, cookies, crackers, and pasta, I would say, are our specialties. So what else do you need in life? Maybe some water, right?
Yeah. And Roberto, talk to us about some of our newer products.
As far as our new products, well, we're a European company, but we knew that in the USA they love chocolate chip cookies. So we just launched a new chocolate chip cookie. And then one thing we kept getting requests for was s'mores during the summer. But there wasn't a good honey graham or graham cracker out there, so we've launched a honey graham. And then on the bread side, we have a whole new frozen bread line that is using the next generation technology from Europe. It's really fantastic. It's actually rollable dough. It's made with this rollable dough, which is, if you know, without gluten, very hard to achieve the elasticity of gluten bread when you're using non-gluten, making other grains besides gluten.
This is our second year of being here too, and so just like what Susanna was saying,
what
it's still
going.
These
products that he's talking about, do they have those? Are they available in supermarkets and stores now, or are they just being introduced?
These products are available. So our cookies are available in stores right now.
We're available in all 50 states, trying to push every day to get more and more. We've got big chains like Walmart to take us. And then, you know, your regional food stores, no matter where, you know, depending on where you are. We're here today in Utah, so Albertsons, Dick's Market, Sprouts, they're all, you know, places that take our product. Everybody wants all 40, but, you know, slowly we've been pushing for more distribution because, again, it's about the full solution for our consumers.
And then in terms of our frozen line that you were talking about, Roberto, when are those going to be in stores?
Those are actually in two East Coast chains, ShopRite and Stop and Shop, but pushing for the West Coast. So pushing, but we always say there's some pull, too, if we can get some consumers to, you know, talk to their store, it's very democratic process. Go into a store and say, hey, where's our that new Sharp Frozen line? Sometimes we can pull it through as well.
Yeah. Yeah, brilliant. So lots going on here. There are tons of people. There's a huge line in front of our booth right now. So it is just overwhelming. And, you know, I'm 5 feet tall, so I can't really give you very accurate maybe account of how many people are here.
We'll put it on your shoulders, everybody who's listening, how do you spell the name of the company? And have a website?
Yeah, so it's pronounced Shar, and it's spelled S-C-H-A-R.
Okay.
And, yeah, and like Roberto was saying, I mean, it is a European company, so they have 300 products in Europe, and we always hear, oh, we wish we had those, and we're slowly getting them into the U.S. because we did just branch out to the States. So slowly but surely, we're getting those products out here, so...
Well, it sounds great, and it sounds like you're having a great time there at the event, and we'll let you go deal with all the folks and walk around and have fun there at the show, and it's amazing how much gluten products are out there nowadays, and anybody who wants to find out more, you can go to the Shar website, or you can find most of these products in your local supermarkets, Walmart, et cetera. So, Allison, we'll let
yes.
you go. Thank you for joining us from the show, and keep us posted. If you find out anything new, post it on our Facebook page.
Absolutely. Well, thanks so much, Julian. And we will be here today until 5. So if anyone wants to stop on by, we are in Salt Lake.
All right. Great. Thanks a lot. You take care.
Thanks so much. Have a good one.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay, everybody. There you go. That was Alexander Back, as I call her, our roving reporter there in Utah. And, Laurie, we're almost out of time, and we got about 3 or 4 more minutes. Did you have anything else you wanted to add, anything you want to pick on me about before we sign off?
Well, I could pick on you for a lot of things, but I'll be nice. We're on the radio, I'll be nice.
Yeah, be nice.
It's really
on the
good,
radio.
I have to say. And not to just change the subject, but those chocolate chip cookies, I would love to try them because, you know, they're like my favorite.
Well, it's amazing all the different products that are out there now because, you know, who ever thought of having chocolate chip cookies and the breads and all the different things that are out there, the pastas and... There's a ton of it out there, gluten-free products. Pretty much you can get anything nowadays, it sounds like, there's people working on alternatives for folks who need gluten-free, so it's pretty cool. And we thank Alex for joining us today, and we thank all of our guests. Today, we went from building barns to killing hogs to rhythm and blues to French croissants.
There was a crock pot of love.
But it was. What'd you call it? A potpourri, right?
Potpourri. Mm-hmm.
Join us next week for another foodie show. We never know what's going to happen, and we appreciate everyone's support. Thank you for supporting us now for over 2 years, and I'm looking for a song to close out on for the show today. Come back and join us next Saturday again at 11:30 East Coast time. Laurie and I are going to the beach now. We're going to go eat some food down in Ocean City. So everyone have a nice one. I think I'm going to play a little Lathan Moore, Ain't Nothing Like a Woman, and everyone have a nice weekend, and we'll see you next week.
Top shelf tequila, you can't keep it.